Welcome to the Sean Chandler Talks About Movie Delays podcast, where I talk about the latest 2020 movie delays every single week. I don't want to, but that's what happens every week. So that has to be the subject we discuss each week. Joining me, as always, to talk about the latest movie delays is Griffin Schiller. Griffin, how you doing?
Didn't we do this show like last week or something?
I feel like there's no week.
There's no difference in today's show versus last week's show. So, you know what, guys? You can just tune out right now. It's fine. We're just going to talk about the same stuff, have the same conversations, and get mad about the same things. So,
yeah, indeed. Yeah. Indeed. When we started this podcast, the hope was to talk about all the movies that are coming out and having interesting insight about the box office related to them, the backstories behind them, potentially having interviews and junkets and stuff like that. Then the year 2020 happened, and it turned into every single week we talk about how no movies are coming out in the year 2020. What a year to kick off the podcast.
Yeah.
What a year.
Truly no better year. And, you know, no matter how much time we have on our hands, it doesn't matter. It's just the same stuff. So,
yeah. 7 months now of every single week, movies getting delayed. But today we're Twinkies. For those listening to the audio version, we're both wearing tank tops.
We're
both just in the mood to be. I don't even know what the statement would be about why we're dressed like this. I came straight from the gym, so I'm amped up.
And I'm going to go work out immediately after this podcast.
There you go. There you go. Gym-themed podcast, but only in our apparel, not in what we'll be actually discussing. So as we go into today's show, kick things off a little bit talking about the death of Eddie Van Halen. Normally talk about movies, TV, stuff like that. But in the world of music, that is a colossal loss that we just had. Of course, we got to talk about movie delays and because there were so many. When there's just one or two, and like, what's the point of talking about it? I have the same take every single week, but this time it is the consequence of Regal Cinema shutting down. So we'll talk about that. We're a week late on this, but that whole Electro coming back to the MCU thing dropped. So it's like, I guess we should probably talk about that at least a little bit, even though it just feels like that was a month ago. It was 1 week ago. Yesterday, we got the cast for the new Resident Evil reboot. And then we got some pictures from The Witcher Season 2, so I thought might as well talk about that just a little bit. If you're listening to the audio version of this, be sure to leave a rating, a review. It does help the podcast rank a little bit better so new people can discover it and join in on the conversation. If you are joining in live, be sure to tell us what you're thinking about each of the subjects that we're discussing down below in the comment section. From time to time, we will pull some of your comments up and have them be a part of what we are talking about. And with that said, let's go ahead and get started with kind of our first subject of the day. And that is that yesterday we learned that Eddie Van Halen, the guitarist from the band Van Halen, who kind of revolutionized rock and roll guitar, passed away after a long battle with cancer. So on this channel, obviously, we talk about movies, but during the zeros, that first decade of adulthood for me, I was much more into music than I was, not to say that not that I wasn't into movies, but I was in a bunch of bands. Even if you look right over there at my wall, you can see maybe you can see it. There you go. If you go like that, you can see my Les Paul hanging there. So music has been a huge part of my life. And the way that I learned to play guitar is that I just bought a bunch of guitar magazines in the late 90s, early zeros. And I would just learn all the riffs from all the different bands. And of course, Eddie Van Halen being one of the definitive guitarists of the last 50 years, they always had tabs and stuff. So I learned to play guitar trying to play Eddie Van Halen riffs like so many other guitars from the last 45 years. And, you know, I was never really a fan of the Sammy Hagar era, but all the David Lee Roth stuff. And then even Van Halen 3 with Gary Cherone, which everyone else hates, that came out when I was in high school. So I was actually kind of fond of it. And I liked the band Extreme. He used to be the lead singer for the band Extreme. So I even liked their crappy album, Van Halen 3 with the random guy that showed up for just one album. So this was actually a pretty big loss for me. This was hit me really hard when I opened it up and I saw it on Facebook and I had to like double check. Is this real? Is this one of those fake things? What? This can't be real. And then you look into it.
65 too.
Yeah, 65.
It's like so young.
Mm-hmm.
Although to be honest, like I feel like he's the kind of guy where it was like, you know, just given the kind of like
rock and roll lifestyle. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like one of those that's like, I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner, but like it is really depressing for sure. I mean, just like an absolute icon and like pioneer in like rock and roll. Like you don't have musicians like him anymore.
Right.
You really don't. And that's something I miss, like the true rock stars, you know?
Right. And you know, there was that was the era that they rose to prominence, was the era of the rock star. And then it was kind of that he invented this style of playing that dominated rock music of the 80s with the tapping guitar solo, shredding, even the guitar tone, everything about it. He invented something that was incredibly influential. And then even right as you have an era where you start having press to where you and guitar shops and all this stuff to where people are going and playing riffs, he was just the dominant influence of so much of that for about, you know, 20 years. And then of course still influential to this day of anybody that's into rock guitar.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, like 65, it's kind of right in that window of old, but not old.
Yeah.
And then like you said, for rock stars that have from the 80s, like,
yeah,
they lived wild. They lived wild.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't have the reputation of Ozzy Osbourne. He didn't snort lines of ants and then pee on the Alamo and get banned from the city of San Antonio.
And somehow he's still alive.
Yeah, but pretty wild lifestyle nonetheless.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I think it's that we hadn't really heard anything about him being sick. I don't know if that was news. I don't know if it was common knowledge that he had cancer, but it wasn't something that dominated the news cycle or anything like that.
Right.
And it just kind of happened. You just kind of open your phone in the year 2020 and we're used to bad news, but normally it also ties back to, you know, the beer bug out there that, and so then when you see it as cancer and it's, oh, wow. And, you know, for me, this one hit more than, you know, even Kobe, because I'm more of a musician.
Right.
And so then, and so this was one that was like, wow, that's, you know, obviously more tragic for someone in their 40s versus someone in their 60s. But as personal connection to it, it hit pretty hard for me.
Yeah.
And, do you have any favorite Van Halen songs?
I'm trying to think off of the top of my head. I mean, I just know. Like, I know my dad, like, always in the car, my dad would always have, like, you know, the stations on that would play, like, classic rock and stuff like that. And so, like, you know, you'd always, like, they'd always have, like, Eruption on and then going into...
Girl, You Really Got Me Now.
Yeah, exactly. And all that stuff. And, like, that's fun to listen to. I wouldn't say that's my favorite. I don't know, man. It's so tough to choose. Because I like so many of that... on that particular album, right? With like Jump and stuff like that. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to say, what's your favorite?
Unchained. Okay. Starts off. It goes like that. Just if that helped you out understand which song I was talking about.
Oh, yeah. Chained. That one is good. Yeah.
They had even beyond just his guitar playing, which is definitive, even the way they did harmonies, group vocals, so much about that David Lee Roth era through 1984 was so distinctive, to where even knowing which, like, some of the songs kind of blend together just a little bit, some of the albums blend together because they had such a tight sound. They changed it a little bit for 1984 when they brought in the keyboards, and then he was like, hey, you guys think I only know guitar? By the way, I can also shred on the keyboards.
Right.
But all my favorites would be from the David Lee Roth era. I even like some Sammy Hagar solo stuff. I mean, I Can't Drive 55. It's in Back to the Future 2. Mos Tequila came out when I was high school. So a lot of that stuff, but the actual stuff with Van Halen, that collaboration, none of it was particularly memorable for me. So, but like all the David Lee Roth stuff was pretty awesome for me. But so.
Yeah, I just thought about it. I think Panama might be... Mm-hmm. That's probably one of my favorites for sure. That one's good.
Mm-hmm. That's 1984 is when they're all really good, but it seemed like the first one and then 1984, the last one they did with David Lee Roth, both like have just so many definitive songs amongst them.
Yeah.
But if you look at the other ones too, it's like, oh, these are also awesome. So
just a
really sad thing that to lose a legend so suddenly and without anything leading up to it.
But
that is the year 2020 for us. Okay, moving right along. Whew, we had a ton of delays this week.
That's all the news is this week. That's all it is.
The whole news is just a series of delays. And it's even tough, like, remember which one came first. But I guess all the Disney stuff, we already talked about that. We weren't going to talk about delays, and then it dropped in the middle of the stream. And then right afterwards, No Time to Die gets delayed.
Right.
And then because No Time to Die got delayed, I don't even remember if we talked about that on there, if we just talked about it on your channel. I don't even remember anymore. It's all blending together.
Yeah.
So then No Time to Die gets delayed. And then Warner Brothers does this whole mass shuffle where they took Dune, shuffled it back to the Batman's date, and then the Batman got pushed back to 2022. And in the middle of all of this, the company that owns Regal Cinema said, hey, if we don't have No Time to Die, we can't stay open. So they decided they're going to close down temporarily. And I think that goes into action tomorrow, is their last day open here in the U.S. for this foreseeable future. And so I don't think there's anything particularly interesting to talk about most of the specifics of any of these. But the question we talked about over on your pod or over on your channel, if you guys want to go check that out, if you want a whole 20-minute discussion about all of this, is the goofiness of No Time to Die's delay. And then what does this mean for movies in general? So when we say the goofiness of the No Time to Die delay is that they kick-started their marketing campaign again.
Yeah.
This is their second big push. They kicked it off. They obviously put out another trailer a few weeks back. And then the day before they delayed, they put out a music video. And so that's like their like final piece of marketing material they had that was like be fresh and new. They put that out. The next day they're like, just kidding, it'll actually be a long time till the movie comes out. And so they like have used up all their marketing material that they have, plus money, only to delay it. So it just feels like, you know, right hand not talking to the left hand. And the delay itself isn't surprising. We thought that was coming. The surprising part is that they didn't seem to see it coming and kicked off the marketing stuff. And then I guess since they delayed the movie, they're still doing the press tour. So I think Daniel Craig and Billie Eilish were on Jimmy Fallon's show like promoting the movie.
Oh my God. It was like, why would you do that? Because I understand why they did it, because they already spent the money. So it was like, yeah, he was on Fallon. They dropped a clip. They showed a new TV spot. Billie Eilish performed her song. And it's just like, well, yeah, we'll see you next year. And it was just like, so clearly this was like a down to the wire decision.
Right.
And they just decided to spend a bunch of money regardless. It's frustrating. I understand why they're doing this.
Right.
It makes sense. And on the other side of the coin, I don't think it's fair for people to solely blame Bond for Regal and Cineworld going under. I think that's absurd.
Yeah, it's the final piece, but everything else happened too.
Right. So. Well, and here's the other thing. If your entire business model hinders on a single film releasing in theaters, you've got bigger problems. Especially because it's like a third party thing that requires you to stay in business. So, But yeah, all that said and done, like, oh, it was great. I love the clip. I mean, it wasn't a whole lot, but it was a little expanded scene of what we'd seen in the trailers before. And the Hans Zimmer score was great. I don't know. It was just rough to see. But again, you know, they should never have mounted this second marketing campaign to begin with. All you had to do was listen to the experts, the science and all that stuff to know that we were not going to be in a good situation. You know, by the time that No Time to Die was coming out.
They needed to say, we're going to be the next person to test the waters. We know it's not going to do well, but we're going to do what we can. Make that decision or just look around. Like all these other ones did not get people to show up back to the theaters. It looks like all the signs are we're not in a good place yet. And it's just like a month ago. That's when it was announced. No one was surprised by this. It was just weird because they dropped the Billie Eilish music video the day before.
Right. Like that's the thing that was like, oh, this is going to happen, right? Like, because I mean, many people, you know, before this happened were like, oh, it's not going to come out. It's not going to hit theater. Like, why? You're crazy. You're insane for thinking that. Then they start ramping up the second marketing campaign. They dropped the music video. Craig's supposed to be on Fallon debuting a new clip. And it's like, okay, you don't make these financial decisions unless you're 100% like committed through. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's so, no longer a surprise that, like, hey, the world's dangerous. Like, it's not a surprise. Yeah. And that's, I think that was so weird, is that there wasn't a big change over the last 2 weeks. There wasn't a thing that happened that was like, oh, we just discovered this new thing. Oh, there was a change in the landscape. It was just they delayed until they spent money and released a music video. And then they went, yeah, let's pull the plug.
Yeah,
that's weird. Our buddy J-Buck Studios, everybody should be sure to head on over to J-Buck Studios channel, watch his stuff and subscribe. He's a great friend of the podcast and channel. Curious, at what point will the floodgates break and they just have to release some of these via VOD? And I think that's the big conversation a lot of us are having on right. Twitter and other right. places, of like, at what point in time will that happen? Because we're just getting at that point in time where, like, legitimately we have 9 months of blockbusters where only Mulan and Tenet will have been released. Everything else, 9 months of completed films, just shuffle to the next year. And then they have all the completed films that are already supposed to be coming out in 2021 in addition to those. And so then it just starts stacking on top of each other. Studios need to make money. Do you have to pour some fuel into the movie industry in some fashion? And at what point in time are they going to go, all right, we just have to cut our losses and realize that the market has changed and dramatically change our strategy? That yeah. what we're planning on does not work. There's no good options. Let's just dump these wherever we can, at least some of them. And that's where I think they shot themselves in the foot. Like, with now it seems like so weird that Spiral, the Book of Saw, the new Saw movie.
Yeah.
What does that cost? $10 million to make? And they delayed it a year. Why would they? Like,
yeah.
they could have said, hey, we're going to pull it. We're not quite sure what we're going to do. Then you drop that VOD, drop it on streaming this like today. That's the movie everybody talks about for the month of October. But they didn't do that. Or even Halloween. That couldn't have cost all that much money to make. And it would just absolutely destroy VOD and streaming. People love that franchise. Mm-hmm. Everybody would be talking about the new Halloween Kills. It would kill the month of October. But they delayed it a year. And I don't want to look. It's easy to hindsight 2020. None of us thought 6 months ago that we'd still be delaying movies now. So I don't want to go too far down the path of like, why did they do this? But at the same time, I can do that. Why did they do this?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I don't know. I understand why, because it's like they need to make money and they need to make calculated risks in this market of uncertainty. It's like, OK, we dumped all this money into the film. Should we delay the movie or not? So it's like, or it's like, should we release now or not? Especially when the market is just, you know, so tumultuous. So like, I understand wanting to delay certain projects. I do think Spiral would have killed it if they released it in October. That to me was probably a missed opportunity, but I also don't know how much it would have lost in the process. So like, this is sort of the conversation that, I was having yesterday. I was having with friends and stuff like that. The thing that's frustrating about this was the lack of coordination between studios when it came to releasing the film. So like, I don't know if Warner Brothers tried like working with other studios to try and create like a release model for like films coming out, obviously with going forward with Tenet. But I think, you know, with Nolan pushing for Tenet to come out, he was hoping that, that would be like the little, stimulus that they need in order to like incentivize other studios to begin releasing films. So realistically, they should have had a better plan in place to be like, okay, listen, we will release Tenet right here. Maybe in about a month or so, you guys can release like Saw, like Spiral or something like that. Maybe in a little bit later down the road, we'll do Wonder Woman 1984, No Time to Die, so on and so forth, and do this like slow ramp up. So there's that side of it. There's also the fact that maybe they shouldn't have released anything at all. Because like if other studios weren't willing to do this coordinated effort, then I think maybe WB in hindsight probably should have put its foot down and been like, hey, Chris, listen, we can't do this. It's going to be a disaster and it's going to do more harm than good. I understand them, putting faith in someone like Nolan because he's given them so much, but also they're the studio. It's their movie. Nolan will come back to work with you because he enjoys working with you. But also, like, you got to be realistic about this whole thing. Because like now Tenet is already slated to come out on Blu-ray towards the beginning of December. And it's like, mm-hmm. well, now you've just screwed your whole release model because people aren't going to go see it in theaters now if they can just wait to watch it on digital at the end of November, beginning of December. And so like, I think Warner Brothers knows that it was a failure. And so they're just going to, you know, put it on, you know, VOD and disc and physical media and stuff like that. But, yeah, I don't know. And I was talking about this with Jared and Zach on my live stream yesterday, which is the fact that I don't quite understand why the split release model of paid VOD and like limited theatrical / drive-ins like hasn't really been considered across the board. Like something like No Time to Die or something like Spiral or, you know, any of these sort of genre films or stuff like that. Soul may even do this, but like if they had, and it's what Netflix has been doing for years because they've literally had to have a limited theatrical window, maybe about a month or like 3 weeks or something like that, where you play the film in as many theaters as you can, including drive-ins, understand, you know, the risk that you're taking, and then still play it in theaters, but put it on VOD, you know, do some sort of like split release schedule there, something that appeases the theaters and NATO, not the, you know, the national right. whatever theater organization. It's stupid that they're named the same thing, but something that's going to appease the theater owners and NATO, and something that's going to be a financial, you know, it's something a little bit better than just like throwing darts at a board and seeing what sticks. You know, it's, I don't know. There's a lack of, I guess, coordination and strategy here.
Yeah. Well, and the thing I've been saying for about 3 months now, and now it's getting more and more ridiculous, is that it's bizarre to me that none of the studios have come up with a creative solution to what to do with their movies. Right. All of it is either like, let's delay our movie, or we'll go VOD with a different premium price. Disney's creative idea, we'll put it on our streaming service and charge $30. Like, I mean, there's, you see that, and it's, there's no creativity. There's no exploration of how can you create win-win scenarios. There hasn't been the one of, it's, if you buy it for $25, you get a Blu-ray when it comes out off. Like, they haven't found anything that feels like discovering the win-win.
Right, right.
And it's all just delay or premium price. And that to me is what's bizarre about all of this, is that these are the people that spend millions, billions of dollars coming up with creative stories, and they can't craft a creative release strategy.
Yeah.
That's, it's just strange to me that no one, not one of the studios, they haven't teamed up. They haven't talked to each other. It doesn't seem like the studios are partnering up with the theaters. Just, it just feels like not a single ounce of progress has been made in yeah. months of all of this. And that to me is just very frustrating and confusing as to why that is. So there's a lot of questions in the chat, but
yeah.
Don't see a lot of comments related specifically to what we're discussing.
Right.
So I think someone asked how long will Regal be closed until there's movies. I mean, yeah. It's not like, hey, we're going to shut down for 3 months. Well, it's not that they're going to shut down for 3 months. They're going to shut down until movies are coming out. Like they just can't sustain it without those movies that pull people to the theater.
Yeah, that's the thing. There hasn't been, again, I feel like a dead record repeating the same thing, but like, there hasn't been like a film that's come out that's really like incentivized people to go to the movie theaters. Like I was saying yesterday, like Tenet, it's a Christopher Nolan film, and traditionally in a normal market, people would be willing to give that film a shot, right? They'd be willing to say, oh, this is interesting. Christopher Nolan has made cool films before. Let's give it a try. Let's go check it out. On top of like his loyal fan base. But like now it's like, okay, maybe we can wait for that one. It looks good, but it's not quite worth the risk. I feel like because there hasn't been like a legitimately a blockbuster comic book film come out, there hasn't been a Black Widow, there hasn't been Wonder Woman 1984, that people are just like, yeah, I'm okay. I don't need to take that risk. Like, look, we take calculated risks every day just by going to the grocery store, but that's a necessity. You need that. If you're going to go to the theater, that is not necessarily like essential to do. So it better be worth your while if you want to be like, okay, maybe that's something I want to consider doing despite the circumstances. The theaters, the studios haven't given us anything to, you know, warrant making that decision outside of Tenet. And that was only like, back in August? So it's like, it has been a long period of time since it came out. And so people are like, I can wait. It's fine.
And it's part of that getting people to think about going to the theaters, putting something that's actually a hook that's enticing. And it gets like, in the year 2020, going out to do things is weird. You don't know what the expectations are. I went out and had a night with the boys for the first time in like 7 months. Yeah. It's my buddy's birthday. And so Monday, we went out for dinner at a restaurant, and then we went to an escape room in downtown Austin. And all of that sound would be totally normal a year ago. Like, it wouldn't be you wouldn't have to think about any of it. But now it's, if you go to a restaurant, how long do you have? When do you have to have your mask on? When can you take it off? Where can you park in downtown Austin? Like, everything's different. We get to the escape room, they don't let you in the building until it's your time, so we have to stand outside. And so, like, there's all these little things about the way things used to normally work, and there's all these safety protocols. And that applies to a movie too. You go to the movie and you have to stand behind a plexiglass shield when you're like doing all this stuff. You have to have a mask on while you're watching the movie if you're not eating popcorn. All of those things dissuade people from wanting to go or wanting to even put up with the fuss of figuring it out. And having a tentpole blockbuster that gets people to go and go, oh, it's not so bad, it's not so weird, it's fairly normal. Whatever those things are that gets them over the hurdle of going the first time, we haven't really had that besides just Tenet, which that appeals to a group of people. That is a good hook for a group of people, but not for all people. And so then, you know, when that one didn't catch people, so here we are. Right. The other question on this one, where the guy asked also, do you think AMC will follow suit? AMC's, they've been in pretty bad financial trouble a long time. Before all of this, they were in trouble. This wasn't helping. They shut down. It might be more permanent.
Yeah, I feel like they are in a situation right now where they, well, I don't know. Because I say that it would be financially beneficial to them to stay open. But like, if nothing is coming out, what is the point? What is the purpose? The only film, as we'll talk about with the release date shuffles, the only film that they have to look forward to is Wonder Woman 1984. And that comes out on December 25th. And I'm not even convinced that that's going to come out on that date. So if they closed up shop, I have to imagine that is more cost effective than staying open and just, you know, having people filter in and out and possibly go see Tenet, possibly, I don't know, go see like Raiders of the Lost Ark for the nth time. I mean, there's only so much you can do in terms of classic films, like especially because it's like, well, okay, I don't need to go to the theater to see those. I can just watch them at home.
Right.
Again.
Well, that's what I've been trying to, just out of like supporting theaters, to go to some of those and trying to get people to go with me. And so I went to see Friday the 13th, Sunday night. It was like 8 people in the theater.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get my wife to go see Total Recall with me this weekend. She's like, if I want to watch Total Recall, just watch it at home. Like,
well, that's the thing. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, here's a good idea. What if, and again, I it probably depends on your financial situation, but you could always just buy a ticket to the film, right? And then just watch it at home instead of, going out to the theater to go see it. That way you are still supporting the theater, but you don't have to take like the, the risk of actually going somewhere. So I don't know.
Something to think about.
Yeah.
I will personally put my health on the line. trying to convince my wife to leave the house and do the same is not quite as easy. So all that to say, man, it's bad.
Yeah.
It's a pretty bad situation. All right, moving right along to our next topic of conversation on here. Yesterday, they announced the cast for the Resident Evil reboot. So I've seen all the movies, and I actually have a ranking written for it because I watched them for a top 15 highest grossing video game movies. I watched all of them because five of the movies on the list are on there, something like four out of them. So might as well watch all of them. And I haven't shot the video yet, so I've been thinking about doing it for this month. But I haven't really played the games. I wasn't the biggest fan of them. The way that at least they used to be done, they might be better now, but they frustrated me back in the PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2 era. So anyway, I don't really know the characters outside of the movies. So we've got Casco de Lerero. I don't actually know how to pronounce her name. Robbie Amell is in there, and Neil McDougal, and a bunch of other people. But that's like the whole cast all at once. It's always kind of fun whenever they do that. With, you know, Kaya seems to be, she's on a pretty solid streak over the last few years, kind of building a resume, doing a lot of different genres. It seems like they're taking it more seriously than just casting a former model to be the lead because he's the director wants to marry her. If you don't know, the director of the Resident Evil movies is married to Mia Jovovich. That's what that's referring to. So, I mean, it seems like a positive direction. Robbie Amell seems to show up in everything these days. So everything that's not a blockbuster has Robbie Amell in it. Any thoughts on this? Have you played the games to be able to have an opinion as to whether this is good casting or not?
I haven't played it enough to be able to know if there's an opinion. I played one of them on like the PlayStation 1 back in, God, I don't know. Yeah, back when that was a thing. But like... I trust this. The concept is interesting just because I know they're going to try and follow the games more closely, I guess, which will be good for fans of the franchise. I'm not the person to go to when it comes to Resident Evil opinions. So sorry.
So unfortunately, I don't have a better take on any of that. Just to say that, I mean, it seems like they're trying to do a little bit better, I don't know, less schlocky take on the material. That's a way to phrase it. It seemed like they got in a rut with that franchise of they just were doing the slow-mo 3D action shots, very loose canon with a bunch of it. So I don't, you know, I guess I'm optimistic mildly based off this casting information. Can't say too much beyond any of that, but the people that they got, I like these names to be attached to it. But that's as far as I can really say. I had a super chat come in from Nicholas. Thoughts on getting director cut in Godfather 3. So I guess you're asking, they've announced that they're doing this new cut of the movie. What do I think about it? Francis Ford Coppola is kind of infamous for doing recuts of his movies and having long shoots where there's an enormous amount of footage so that they're trying to figure out what to do with it. I mean, obviously with Apocalypse Now having, I don't know how many cuts there are because I would run out of fingers trying to count the number of cuts they did for the movie. And so Godfather 3 had a really long shoot as well that had overruns and things like that. So there's a lot of footage. There's a lot of conflict between him and the studio and what he wanted to do with it, what he wanted to focus on, and what he wanted to title the movie versus what they thought it should be titled, and how he perceived it as an epilogue to the first two films, and they wanted it to be part three. So what do I think of them doing a third cut or a new cut of Godfather 3? Cool. I don't have a strong opinion on it. So I can't really chime in with anything particularly interesting. I've only seen it once, and that was like 2 months ago whenever I was doing a ranking of the IMDb top 15. I was already going to watch Godfather 1 and 2. So I thought might as well watch Godfather Part 3 and do a ranking. So I did that a couple months back. That's the only time I've watched it. It essentially lived up to its reputation that it does a lot of things. It's not certainly it's nowhere near as good as the first two, does a lot of things really well. And Francis Ford Coppola casting his daughter in it, easily the weakest link in the film, and holds it back. So you can't really solve that by a recut.
Yeah, that was literally about what I was that's what I was going to say. I was like, no retooling of footage would fix the glaring problem in that film, which is Sofia Coppola. Like, phenomenal director, great filmmaker. The film she just put out with Bill Murray and Rashida Jones is delightful. Love her. She's not a good actress.
Yeah, not an actress.
So unless Coppola decided to just remove all of her scenes and figure out some semblance of a narrative and, you know, get rid of nepotism, then sure, then I'm all in. But this, I can't possibly see how it'll fix the movie. Like Coppola is saying, oh, this is my director's cut of The Godfather 3. When we all know what the issues were with it.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be better. I don't know. I'll check it out, but
you know, and that's, you know, how that's the thing about it that makes this one a little bit odd is that's what I knew about it going into the movie, that his daughter's really bad. She's the weak link in the film. That's its reputation. And it's unfortunate that a Godfather film is just overshadowed by a bad performance, and the bad performances from the director's daughter. So it just looks bad. Like, there's not a good interpretation of it. Like, oh, you cast your daughter and she's terrible. And right. She gave a Godfather film a really bad reputation for that reason.
Yeah.
There's no way around it. That's what it is. And that is unfortunate. All right. Moving along to our next topic of the day, we got our first screenshots from or first pictures from The Witcher Season 2. Just pictures of the cast wearing different costumes. Anytime it comes to these types of set photos, first reveals, the total film and stuff like that, I'm almost never actually interested in them. What they signify to me is it's definitely coming. It's really happening. And that's cool. Yeah. That's interesting to me that we're it's locked in. They're filming. Cool. But that's all they really are to me. like, oh, look, it's Henry Cavill in a black suit with a sword.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, it's Yennefer.
It's like, cool. Okay. We got a season two coming, but I'm like, whatever. I don't really care too much about that. So, yeah, I mean, it looks cool, but, I can't say that I have a lot of insight.
Yeah. So that's all. I just want to kind of acknowledge it. See if you, did you watch season one of The Witch Rider? I don't recall.
I watched like half of it. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I liked what I saw of it. I just have been meaning to finish it. I have The Haunting of Bly Manor I need to finish right now.
I'm six episodes into that too. Did you see The Turning in January?
No.
So it's a weird situation. So The Haunting of Bly Manor and The Turning, they're both based off this same story from 100 years ago.
Oh, it is based off the same story. Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, Turning of a Screw. And so I start watching The Haunting of Bly Manor, which it comes out on Friday, but we have press leaks of it. And so I'm watching it and I was like, isn't this just The Turning? This is really familiar. And then there's some things that were different enough that I was like, all right, maybe it's just very...
Listen,
similar.
Don't you dare compare Bly Manor to The Turning.
It's the same story. It's the exact same story. Yeah. So we got to like episode four and I was like, this is too similar. There's got to be something going on here. This is getting weird. So I looked up like, oh, it is. We have two different adaptations of this 120 year old story coming out in the same year.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of interesting. So that's what I'm watching right now as well. On The Witcher, once you finish it, it makes the whole thing better. The first half of it, I watched it and I went, what on earth is going on? Like, I don't get this. Yeah. So I read some stuff about the timeline and went, oh, okay, this makes more sense. And I rewatched it and I liked it a lot more when I watched it knowing the timeline.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. So I don't know, hopefully it gets better then as it goes on. So,
all right, moving right along. Next subject at hand would be we got the very weird announcement that Jamie Foxx is returning as Electro.
Yeah.
So for Spider-Man 3, assumption being we're going multiverse. So, but that's not guaranteed. And then Jamie Foxx put out an Instagram post where he said he wasn't going to be blue. Yes. And then he deleted that.
Yeah.
And like, so,
yeah.
So it's not just that we got this weird announcement that was like, what? I don't, I don't know what to make of this one other than to say you're the defender of Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
How about you try and explain to us why this is an amazing thing for them to do? That's a great idea.
I think it's, well, I don't know. I mean, it gives them a new chance to sort of like do something with the character differently, to explore him further. I actually really like Jamie Foxx in The Amazing Spider-Man 2. I thought just the campiness that he brought to it. His arc was good. I mean, obviously, I think the movie kind of like treated him poorly. Like the movie, like at every chance they get, just took a giant dump on him. Was really mean spirited towards him, and so like in a weird way, it sort of like made me have more sympathy towards him, even though he's like clearly a bad guy. I don't know. He was just a fascinating character that I enjoyed, and like I definitely like to see more of. And I think, you know, with the way he died in The Amazing Spider-Man 2, you can make the argument that, oh yeah, when he like, when all the energy and electricity sort of just like, you know, supercharged him, it like shot him into another dimension or whatever, and then that's going to be how he shows up in you know, Spider-Man 3. That paired with the rumor of like Toby and Andrew Garfield possibly returning back, that paired with the other rumor that apparently Kirsten Dunst and Dane DeHaan are supposed to be returning as Green Goblin and Mary Jane Watson. Just cut the crap and call it Spider-Verse. That's basically what they're trying to do. And I think that the success of the animated film proved that you can do that. But, you know, we'll see if it works out in the live action film. My issue with this is that, and I said this yesterday, during the Tom Holland era, we've never gotten the opportunity to have a Spider-Man centric focused movie.
Exactly. A normal Spider-Man story.
A normal Spider-Man. It's always like team ups, you know, interdimensional stuff, multiverse, like just a whole bunch of stuff. And I'm like, give me Holland Spider-Man dealing with real world issues. Like, wouldn't it be great if, like, you know, the Far From Home stuff is happening, and so now the world knows his identity, and like the state of New, or the city of Manhattan or New York or whatever is like putting him on trial for the murder of what they thought to be this supervillain or this superhero, this guy that was supposed to be their next savior. So it's like him dealing with that personal issue, and then like maybe, I don't know, Norman Osborn like hires Kraven the Hunter to take him down or something. Yeah. Like I don't know. Obviously, there's like more stuff that could go in there, but something that is very much just like Peter dealing with the repercussions of what happened in the last film, but also like keeping it a Spider-Man story. I just find it really funny that their whole MO with the Tom Holland era has been like, oh, we're going to dial it back and we're going to bring it back to just light Peter Parker in high school, being a kid and just doing friendly neighborhood Spider-Man things. And I feel like we got that for like a film. And then the rest of the time that he's been Spider-Man, it's been this like intergalactic conflict. Right. And yeah,
I mean, it's you know, he starts off in Civil War. And so it's a team up movie. So it's fun to see him in a team up movie. Cool. I'm down for that. And then we do Homecoming and it is him in high school. Really appreciated that. It's also Tony Stark heavy and he's got a tech suit and everything. In and of itself, that bugged me a little bit. But not like it wasn't anything to make too much of. Then we take Spider-Man and we send him to space for two movies. Like, so we have Spider-Man in space. So then we come back from space and we send him to Europe. And even in Homecoming, we send him to Washington, D.C. And so every single one. And then when we send him to Europe, it's S.H.I.E.L.D. heavy and it's implying multiverse heavy, and then it's not where it goes, but it's a lot of not letting Spider-Man stand on his own, and it's doing alternate takes on Spider-Man, which Granted, we got five Big Apple stories in a row. Cool. Now we've had five weird stories in a row, and I'm fine with weird. But at some point in time, I want to see just Tom Holland swinging through the Big Apple, doing normal stuff. J. Jonah Jameson, he's a menace over the news, and right. like classic Spider-Man type stuff. Not let's find a new alternate take to do with it immediately.
Yeah.
I don't want like people. So, you know, the comment from Gamer Man, comic book thinks that all three Spider-Mans will be in Spider-Man 3. That seems to be a lot of the rumor mill. Do I hate the idea of at some point in time seeing all three Spider-Men together? No, there's a novelty to that that's really interesting. But do I more so want to see just a normal Tom, like just let Tom Holland be Spider-Man telling a normal Spider-Man story without needing to be propped up by space, traveling the globe, Nick Fury, Tony, like just let him have his own movie with none of that stuff.
Yeah.
No. We're going to bring in all the other Spider-Men. Yeah. We don't think Tom Holland can do it on his own. Like for one movie, let him do it on his own.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing is like, I worry that they would just overshadow him in his own movie.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You bring back Tobey Maguire, you bring back Kirsten Dunst, you, and then you have Andrew Garfield in there. Tom Holland suddenly is the least interesting person in his own movie.
Yeah.
And I don't want that.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, like, look, it worked in Spider-Verse. Because like we weren't attached to the act, like it was all about the characters. It wasn't about the actors playing the characters. If you have like Andrew Garfield, Tobey Maguire, Kirsten Dunst, all these people coming back into the fold, it's like, okay, I'm more interested in these people and how they're going to fit in here than I am about Tom Holland and his journey. Now, what they could do is that they could be in there for a small amount of time and they could keep it focused on Holland for sure, like they did with Miles in the animated Spider-Verse movie. I just don't know how well it's going to translate. I don't know. At least give Holland this Spider-Man 3, and then if you want to do Spider-Verse, do it after that. Like, it's not like people are asking for much. They just want one film where he's, like, dealing with just real-world issues without, like, you know, Stark involved, without the Avengers involved, without, you know, Nick Fury and stuff like that. Just, like, let him be Spider-Man. You don't need anyone else. Like, Spider-Man is going to get people into the theater alone. You know, you don't need to add all of these gimmicks and stuff in order to make people excited about Spider-Man. It's Spider-Man. So.
Exactly. People love Spider-Man because he's Spider-Man.
Exactly.
People love Spider-Man in New York. People love classic Spider-Man, and people love Tom Holland as Spider-Man. It doesn't need any gimmicks. It doesn't need all that other stuff. It's like if movie 4, they want to go in that direction, I'd probably even be okay with that. I just want one swing from the Big Apple normal Tom Holland story. In this way, I had a bunch of people on Twitter being like, hey, we already got that five times, but we haven't gotten it with this version. Like, why would you want, like, why would you want to go through a whole, this version that's the most prolific Spider-Man that we've gotten and not have just a normal story? That's weird. That's weird to do that. Well, Homecoming was it really though? It's not super different. It was the right move at that moment. Coming off of five movies that we'd done classic swinging through from skyscrapers, putting him in the suburbs, putting him in a high school. Absolutely. Now he's grown up. So let him swing from the skyscrapers for a little bit. Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Let me see it. So that would be nice. Alrighty. I was going to talk about the Free Guy trailer today. Unfortunately, I didn't get around to watching it. Enough life has happened, enough things have happened that I just happened to miss the Free Guy trailer. So unfortunately, I can't chime in too much on that one, except to say that I saw that it existed, but I did not actually watch it myself. Is there anything in the world of movie news that I missed? It seemed like a lot of, like, just bombarded
just
by stuff.
A lot of
stuff.
Just like delays. Like I like the Dune delays, the Batman delays.
Yeah. So,
and so I mean, like, what is there to say about that we haven't already said by talking about the you know, theater closures and stuff like that? Like, yeah, obviously those films are going to move. I don't know why. I don't know why they waited so long to wait and see if they were going to move Dune. Like, that to me was like, Of course you're going to move Dune. I would have been okay with them maybe doing something on HBO Max. Like, not that it would ever would have happened just because of Dune, but it's like they're already like working on a show for HBO Max. So it's like, why not maybe pair Dune with that and drop it on there? Because I don't know how many people, like, it's already a very niche film. And I'm anticipating that it makes around, you know, Blade Runner 2049 numbers.
That's what's going to happen. It's going to spend a ton of money on marketing. People are going to be shocked that this property that's not actually Star Wars, it's not actually big, exciting, fast-moving blockbuster. It's not that. It was never going to be that. It was never supposed to be that. It's probably going to be exactly what it's supposed to be. It's going to get like over 90%, over 80% on Rotten Tomatoes. Its target audience is going to love it, and its target audience is going to be about the same size as Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that you know, maybe dropping it on something like an HBO Max, I don't even know how much money it would make, but I think people would be more interested in checking it out there because they can just do it from the comfort of their home. Maybe even doing like a limited, like a paid VOD release like that on there. I don't know. It's something interesting to entertain. Not that I would ever want to see it that way. Not that I think they would ever do it, but like, I don't know. You might reach a wider audience that way.
Right. All right. I think that'll do it for the audio version of the podcast. Griffin, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me over on the Film Speak channel doing God knows what. And then you can also find me on Twitter at Griff Schiller.
Everyone, be sure to head on over to his channel, like, subscribe, all that fun stuff for coverage of all kinds of movies, movie news. And we have what's your Indiana Jones series you have coming up in the near future?
Oh, yeah, I'm working on a video. So there is a, well, I can't really tell you what it's about, but there is a thing happening on November 1st. And I am working on a video essay for it about Temple of Doom that I've like almost finished writing. And so I'll have a very fancy video essay up with my voiceover and stuff. It's like a deep dive into that film. It's very long. So I'm very excited to release that. That'll be happening November 1st. So keep an eye out for that.
Be sure to check that out. If you're on the audio version of this, be sure to leave a rating and review. And no, we record these live on Wednesdays. If you want to join in for the discussion as they happen and the Q&A that happens afterwards, that's normally Wednesdays at 11 o'clock Central Time, sometimes a little bit later. We'll try and announce it in advance when we can. And keep talking movies too much.